A while ago, I was reading a book written by Rabbi Emanuel Feldman, who is the brother of the Rosh Yeshiva in Yisrael, but in addition to being the brother of a prominent person, he himself is a very prominent rabbi. He was rabbi in Atlanta, Georgia, for many years. And he came to Atlanta, I believe, in the early 1950s, when there wasn't really all that much going on in terms of Orthodox Judaism in Atlanta. And he was a young rabbi, and he settles into his modest office, and he's a little nervous. He has some sfarim there, and he feels excited, you know, because this is his first shteller, it's his first gig as a rabbi, and he's waiting for his first shiloh to come in. He's very excited what the first shiloh is going to be, you know, after all these years learning in yeshiva, and he learns how to paskin and how to deal with different shilohs. So the phone finally rings, and he picks up the phone. Hello? Oh, it's, I don't remember the name, let's say Bob Greenstein. Okay, hi Bob, what can I do for you? So he says, well, my wife just had a baby boy, and I had a question for you. Oh, all right, he's all excited, a question, Shiloh, Pidyon HaBen, Mila, what's it gonna be? And Bob says, you know, he says, please ask away, Bob, whatever you want. And he says, we're naming our son Nicholas. I just wanted to know if there's a Hebrew equivalent for Nicholas that you could think of. He's like, that's my first Shiloh. And he started to think to himself, Nicholas? I could see it now. Whatever Jewish name I suggest is totally irrelevant. He's what he's going to be called at his bris and his bar mitzvah, and that's going to be it, whatever I suggest. He's not going to be called that the rest of his life. He's going to grow up to have a son, Nick Jr., who will turn his name from Greenstein to something less Jewish, maybe Green or something like that. And he'll have Nick Green, and no one will ever remember that there was a Jew that, you know, that he came from. But he decided, instead of saying that, he said, I think Nechemia would be appropriate. Bob said, okay, thank you very much. Have a good day. Okay, no problem. Mazel tov. And he starts to wonder to himself, you know, what's going to be? You know, is this going to be how he's going to spend the rest of his rabbanus, answering questions like this? What's the Hebrew equivalent for Butch and Joanne and Cleet and Betty Lou, which he writes Baruch Chana Kalman and Bracha Leah, for those who are keeping score? You know, is that going to be how he's going to spend his whole rabbanus? 35 years later, Dr. Nechemia Greenstein, I said Greenstein was the name, let's go with that, is an observant Jew, successful medical practice, lives in Queens, part of a frum community, five beautiful children, all attend fine yeshivas, and all B'nai Torah. So how did that happen? What happened in the intervening 35 years to go from Nick Green III to Nechemia Greenstein with the kids in the yeshiva? So what happened was the rabbi understood something very important. Instead of giving up on the family and assuming that they're never going to become anything, and instead of pushing them to be observant overnight and lashing out at them, what are you hacking me, Nicholas? What kind of a guy are you? What kind of guy you want your kid to be? He dealt with them on their level, and he realized that change doesn't happen overnight. And that same rabbi was there to monitor their religious development over the years, and he was there when Nick was a bar mitzvah, and he was there to teach Nick his brachos for his bar mitzvah, and he was there when the Greensteins kashered their kitchen, and he was there each and every step of the way. And slowly but surely, a boy grew up, and he became a ben Torah, and he allowed them to methodically establish realistic goals and accomplish those goals slowly, because that's how real growth happens. Real growth doesn't happen overnight, it doesn't happen in a moment, it doesn't happen going from 0 to 100 in a half a second. It doesn't work that way. You just burn yourself out that way. That's not how real growth happens. And that's what he understood. All that to introduce the following question. It's very surprising that the Torah, which is our guide to successful, well-adjusted life, juxtaposes the halachos at the end of Parshas Achremos with the primary mitzvah we have at the beginning of Parshas Kedoshim, and no bridge in between. Parshas Achremos concludes with the most abhorrent of all sins. Ervas avicha ve'ervas imecha lo segale. Don't sleep with your father or your mother. Ervas achoscha, ervas bas bincha, bas bitcha. Don't sleep with your grandchild, your sister. Umizarecha lo titin lavri lemolech. Don't pass your child through a fire for molech. B'chol behema lo sitin shchavtcha letama, but don't commit bestiality. Crazy, horrible, horrible sins. And what immediately follows that list of horrible sins? Kedoshim tiyu. So right after you're holding up the madrega of finally getting over your bestiality problem, right, the next level is kedoshim tiyu. You should be a holy tzaddik. You should be a lamed vavnik. Shouldn't there have been like maybe a few steps in between getting over the bestiality and the arayos before you become a saint? Maybe light Shabbos candles. I don't know. Act with integrity. Be a little more respectful. Something else in between. So I think maybe to understand the Torah's juxtaposition over here, it would be interesting to see a comment of the Maharal Maral has a fascinating insight in the Gemara in Ksuvos Tav Samach Vav Amud Beis. The Gemara in Ksuvos tells the story of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai right after the Churban, that he was riding on a donkey on the outskirts of Yerushalayim, and his Talmidim were following him, and he was surveying the damage. You know, the president goes in a helicopter after a hurricane to survey the damage. So Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai was surveying the damage after the Churban. Ra'a riba achas shoysa melaketa sa'orim mi ben galole behemten shalavim. And he saw a young girl that was picking out barley seeds from barley kernels from the dung, the excrement of Arabs animals. She was looking for food, and that's where she was looking. She was so desperate. That's how bad the famine, the starvation was. So she sees him in Satfa Basara. She pulls herself together and she says, Rebbe Parnaseini. She says, Rebbe, support me. So he says to her, Biti Miat, who are you? So she says to him the most surprising answer in the world. Bas Nakdimon Ben Gurion Ani. I am the daughter of the famous Gevir, the famous rich man, Nakdimon Ben Gurion. And right away, he says, Biti, Mamashal Besavicha Echon Halach, what happened to your father's money? What happened to your father-in-law's money? He remembers that when he was when he was at her wedding, he remembers the ksuva had elef alafim dinari zav mi besavia chutz mishal chamela, incredible amount of money in her ksuva. And she okay, the money's all gone. We're not going to get into why. So Bachar Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai va'amar, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai cries out and he says, Ashrecha Yisrael, how fortunate the Jewish people are. Because when they do the will of God, no nation has any sway over the Jewish people. But when we don't do the will of God, then we're underneath even the lowest of the nations, the Arvim. Not only that, not only are we beneath the lowest of the nations, we're beneath the animals of the lowest of the nations, because that's where this girl was. She was underneath the animal, picking out little pieces of disgusting animal food. Barley's animal food. That's what it was doing in the excrement. Disgusting. That's where a Jew ends up when a Jew doesn't do the will of the Ribbono Shel Olam. So Maral points out an obvious difficulty with the remark of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. He's saying, Ashreichem Yisrael, how fortunate you are, Jewish people. That fits very nicely with the first half of the sentence. That when you do right, that you're above everybody else. But how does Ashreichem fit with the second half of the sentence? Ashreichem Yisrael, that when you do wrong, you're lower than an animal that belongs to an Arab. Ashreichem, so lucky. Why is that lucky? That seems very bad. The Maral explains that the uniqueness of Klal Yisrael is every bit as evident in our lowliness as it is in our loftiness. Rabbi Yehuda Halevi, who you all know, one of the great lovers of Eretz Yisrael and great Jewish philosopher, wrote a Sefer Kuzari, and he points out in the Kuzari that there are five levels of creation in this world. The lowest level is domeim, something that has no life, like a rock, has no life to it at all. Second level is tzomeach, a plant, something that grows if it's nurtured. Third level is a balchai, an animal. It's a real live creature. It's not like a plant. Then you have a medaber, a person who's capable of articulating thoughts and speaking, verbal communication. And finally, on the fifth level stands Yisrael, the Jew. Five categories, rungs on a ladder. Domeim, tzomeach, balchai, medaber, Yisrael. They say that in Brisk, they used to say there's a level above that, Reb Chaim. That he wasn't just a better guy, he was an entirely different level of creation. Okay, we assume five. What defines these five categories? So we can categorize things in any number of ways, but like within Medaber, for instance, aren't there better people and worse people, more talented people, better looking people, smarter people? Why do we Dafka draw the line at these five categories? So the Magen of Minsk pointed out there was a simple test that the Khazari must have used to define a category. What defines a category is if it loses its own maila, its own koach, does it just fall down to the next level? Or does it sink even lower than that? Take, for instance, the balchai. If a balchai loses its ruach chayim, an animal loses its life, does it become a tzomeach? It still grows like a plant? No, it loses everything. It goes back to being even lower than a domeim, because it will disintegrate, it will decompose. A domeim at least stays. So it goes to the lowest level of creation. Because if you follow that to the end, a Yisrael loses what makes him unique. the Yisrael doesn't just stand become like a regular medaber, like a regular guy who knows how to speak and be a mensch and talk and act. The Yisrael, when he loses his koach of being a Yisrael, of what makes him unique as a Jew, when he's not osin ritzono shel makom, part of the godless of being a Yisrael is that it defines us. And without it, without ritzono shel makom, we don't just fall back to being like everybody else. We fall, our drop is much more precipitous, we fall much lower than everybody else. Who presides over the moral bankruptcy of Hollywood, if not a Jew divorced from Torah? Varun Khan once pointed out, if you look at names of the leaders of the Russian mafia, the most vicious mafiosos in the world, Jewish names, one after the other. When a Jew is divorced from Torah, the Jew doesn't just stand become a medaber. He loses everything. He's tachas behemton shalom ashvela. That's what Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai was saying, says the Maral. Ashreichem Yisrael. Klal Yisrael, you're so fortunate. We're so bound up with the Ratzon Hashem that when we perform the Ratzon Hashem, we transcend normal human existence. And when we abandon the Ratzon Hashem, there are no limits to the depths with which we might sink. From the lowliness of the Jew, you see, also Ratzon Shel Makom, we can see how fortunate the Jew is. Because he doesn't really do the will of God. It's not something that, Ratzon Hashem is not just something that we do, we follow instructions. We are defined by the Ratzon Hashem. It is who we are. It's our very makeup and our very lifeblood. Given this background, we understand the juxtaposition of the most dreadful sins with the lofty mission of holiness that Klal Yisrael has. Torah is teaching us a valuable lesson. Judaism abhors mediocrity. If we're not going to strive for holiness, if we have no plans of being Kedoshim to you, we're going to find ourselves Ervas Avicha, Ervas Imecha, violating the most perverse, disgusting of averos. Varna Soloveitchik once explained, that's the idea behind the well-known Rashi in Sefer Bereishis, Habar Reik, Ein Bo Mayim. Rashi says, Mayim Ein Bo, V'nechash Ma'akrabim Yesh Bo. Eichitesi. Who said there was Nechash Ma'akrabim? Because if it's Ein Bo Mayim, nature abhors a vacuum. If it's Ein Bo Mayim, if there's no Mayim there, if there's no positive life force there, but there's potential for it, and it's missing it, when there's potential for greatness and you're missing greatness, you don't just become empty. Nechash Ma'akrabim. You become the opposite. There's potential for a force of death. That's the nature of the Jewish people. Last week we spoke about Yom HaTzmaut. We were celebrating 64 years of the State of Israel. I think there's probably no greater reminder that the world sees us as different and that we're held to a different standard and that we are literally a different creature, so to speak. No greater raya than just watching what goes on over 64 years of Jewish history in Eretz Yisrael. You know, this tiny piece of land where all the news is focused all the time. Everything we do and we say is scrutinized so much more carefully than anything anybody else does. You know, just the very existence of the land has the world asking, who is the Jew? What makes the Jew so different? And therefore, this is an appropriate time of the year to rise to the occasion. We should recognize our abilities and recognize what sets us apart. Because one way or the other, we are the Ivri. We are going to be set apart. Ivri me'ever. We come from the other side, Rav Soloveitchik explained in his famous drasha called the Dido Fake. 1956, I think he originally gave it. We are on the other side. We're different than everybody else. We are. It's just the nature. But the question that we have to ask ourselves is, are we going to be the Kedoshim Tiyu, the moral light for the world, the Or LaGoyim, where everyone could look and see how Kadosh behaves? Or are we going to be the Erva Savicha, Mishkav Behema, the lowest of the low, Tachas Behemton Shalarviyim? And that's the godless that Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai was expressing. Because in both of those things, we will find that HaKadosh Baruch Hu loves us. The opposite of love is not hate. The opposite of love is indifference. If HaKadosh Baruch Hu didn't love us, he would be indifferent to our misbehavior. he'd find somebody else. But he doesn't want to give up on us. And that's why when we fail, we become something abhorrent. We become punished in a way. HaKadosh Baruch Hu punishes in ways, us in ways that others don't typically get punished. Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu loves us. And he's looking out for us. And that's the avoda, achremos kedoshim. We overcome the potential for evil at the end of achremos with the striving for greatness at the beginning of kedoshim.